Thank you. So I submitted this to this talk instead of the Created Wellens talk, so sorry about that. But I'm Emily Ott. I'm a PhD candidate in Virginia Tech, and I work with John Galbraith and Lee Daniels. So this is one of my two research wetlands. It is the Charles City Wetland. It's located in Charles City County, Virginia, in the Virginia Coastal Plain. It's a created wetland, so the original site wasn't a wetland. It was mapped as approximately 80% somewhat poorly drained soils and 7% poorly drained soils. So there were some wet areas, but overall it wasn't a wetland. In 1996, the Virginia Department of Transportation came in and wanted to create a forested wetland. So they excavated the topsoil and into the E horizon of the existing soil, and they didn't replace any topsoil. So they left a compacted, fine textured horizon on the top. And with also low organic matter content because of the removal of the A horizon and no organic matter additions, the results were low tree survival. This is a picture of the wetland in 1999, so you can see some wet areas, but overall there aren't really any trees like there were supposed to. And this is from last year. You can see the soil had platy structure as it was compacted. So the location, this is just a picture of the location within Virginia, so it's in the coastal plain, it's very flat out there. And it's on the Chickahominy River terrace, an older terrace. So the site is actually split into two separate wetlands. There's the CCW wet and CCW dry. So they were separated out based on the presence of hydrophytic vegetation in CCW wet. So CCW wet had, in 2002, it had some sedges and rushes, whereas CCW dry was dominated by Lespediza, so it wasn't very wet. Compost was added and incorporated in 2002. There were five rates added that were on this previous slide here. They're added in megagrams per hectare, so dry weight basis, so it's a lot of organic matter that was added. And they are incorporated into the soil, or it was attempted that they were incorporated into the soil since the two highest rates were very thick. Like I said, they're separated on the presence of hydrophytes. And so after the treatments were applied in 2002, 10 trees were planted in each plot, 5 pin oaks and 5 river birches. Later in, I think, 2003 or 2004, they had to actually go and replant a lot of those trees because of a lot of trees died due to most, at that time, I think it was herbivory, so animals eating the trees. But this is what the soils looked like in 2003, about a year after the treatments were applied. So like I said, these treatments, the 224 megagrams per hectare and 336 megagrams per hectare, it was such a large amount of compost added on top of the soil that they actually couldn't incorporate it into the soil with a disc plow. So you see over here the compost is incorporated a little bit, but over here it's not. So the original conclusions in a master's thesis from about 10 years ago were that these two rates weren't ideal because they actually raised the surface of the plots by about 10 centimeters, and so these weren't really well in soils, like they had a higher redox potential. So our objectives were to look and see at the long-term effects of the compost amendments after more than 10 years to see if that conclusion is still the same. And so we went out last year and we did soil descriptions in every plot, and here's kind of a representative photo of each soil from the different treatments. And it was similar between the wet and dry side, so these are mostly the dry side. But you can see that we still have a lot of compost, but treatments 4 and 5 are kind of similar depths of the dark A horizon now. So what we described in most of the soils, we described an A horizon at the top, a BA horizon, and then a BT horizon. So the BT horizon, for the most part, was the original soil that was compacted, and it was too deep for like a plow to try to break it up. So the sampling methods for this research, like I said, we did one mini pit description per plot to 30 centimeters. We used the horizon depths in those descriptions for soil sampling. So we took two bulk density samples per horizon per plot, and then for carbon and nitrogen analysis, we combined the samples into one sample per horizon per plot. And any A horizons that were greater than 10 centimeters, we treated as two horizons just to make sure that the carbon amounts were similar between the top of the A and the bottom of the A. So I have the results split up in between CCW dry and CCW wet. So in CCW dry, we expected that the bulk density of the A horizons would lower with increasing compost rates, and that's what we saw. So even after 14 years, we still see the same an effect on the bulk density from the compost. But if you look at the differing letters, so treatments 4 and treatments 5 are pretty similar. They're not statistically different. And the results were the same within the upper A and the lower A, so the upper 2 centimeters and lower 2 centimeters of the A horizon. And I don't have a graph for the BA and BT horizons because the bulk density didn't vary by treatment in the horizons below the A. So compost only affected bulk density in A horizons, not in BA or BT horizons. The average bulk density in BA horizons was 1.4 grams per centimeter cubed, and in BT horizons it was 1.57 grams per centimeter cubed. So it was still high bulk density in the BT. So here I have soil carbon in the left graph and soil nitrogen in the graph on the right by treatment. And it's a similar result, so you expect more soil carbon and nitrogen with increasing compost rates. So after 14 years, we still saw that, but if you look, there's a huge increase between treatment 3 and treatment 4, the 112 micrograms per hectare and the 224 micrograms per hectare. But treatments 4 and 5 are statistically similar. There isn't really any difference, even though there's a lot more compost that was originally added in treatment 5. And again, we didn't see any effects of compost on horizons below the A horizon. So the BA horizons had an average total carbon of 1.65 or 1.7%, and then BT was lower. So pretty much all that compost stayed in the A horizon. So in CCW wet, the slightly wetter side of the wetland, we saw similar effects with the lowered bulk density with increased compost rates. This graph is missing the lower A horizon for the first two compost treatments because they didn't have a deep A horizon for the most part, so we didn't sample it twice. We just sampled it once at the surface. But we see the same thing again, where treatments 4 and 5 are very similar. So there's no extra benefit really in adding extra compost to bulk density, at least at the 336 micrograms per hectare rate. So for some reason we saw a large difference between the upper A and the lower A horizon in the 112 micrograms per hectare compost. That might be a little bit different with morphology. It might be like a AB horizon instead of a BA, instead of an AP2. So we might have gotten some more mineral mixed in with that those couple of plots there in the 112 micrograms per hectare. But overall, it was the same thing, where bulk density only affected the A horizon and not the horizons below the A horizon. And we still see this high bulk density, 1.53 in the BT. And then again, with average total carbon and total nitrogen in A horizons, it increases with compost rate, but treatments 4 and 5 are pretty similar. They're statistically not different. So we see the same jump from treatment 3 to treatment 4. So that difference between the two lasted for 14 years. But again, we didn't see any difference below the A horizons. So the compost amendments affected total carbon and total nitrogen in the A horizons, but not in BA horizons or BT horizons. So the overall conclusions, we concluded that compost should be added to wetlands that are constructed and compacted, especially when topsoil wasn't replaced and so organic matter is low. And especially to this fine textured wetland, most of these soils were like a clay loam texture, or a clay texture, and they were expansive clays too. Like I said, the original conclusions from about 10 years ago concluded that the 112 megagrams per hectare rate was ideal for short-term results, but for long-term results, over 10 years, we're concluding that the 224 megagrams per hectare rate is ideal for soil carbon storage and for bulk density properties, and that the 336 megagrams per hectare rate doesn't provide any benefits on top of that. So, kind of a cost-saving thing too. There's no point in adding any more compost than 224 megagrams per hectare, which is already kind of a lot. And that also, these conclusions do not change based on the wetness of the sites, the CCW dry and CCW wet. Again, it was pretty much the same at each site, even though wet was a little bit wetter. And just for acknowledgements, I'd like to acknowledge all of my undergrads that helped me collect all of these samples and go out in the field, and undergrads that helped with lab work too. So I think that is all I have. So if anyone has any questions, I would be happy to answer. Yeah.
Emily, you mentioned at the beginning, but I kind of wasn't part of your data set. Did you see any, were there any positive effects on the trees and persistence and growth relative to these compost amendments?
So I did take tree measurements. I took the diameter, breast height, and overall height, and basal diameter of trees. I haven't finished analyzing those yet, but it doesn't seem like there is an effect. If there is an effect on the trees, I think there's an effect, and I can show you on the site diagram. There's these external reference plots that weren't plowed, so they're just kind of what would have happened if the wetland was left as VDOT put it. And I think there is a impact on the trees for plowing, but I don't think there's an impact from the compost, but I have to look at the numbers. Thanks. Yeah?
I don't know how extensive the earlier data set is, but are you able to go back and maybe look at the relative carbon sequestration of the compost given the different amendment rates to figure out the percentage maybe preserved over time?
Yeah, so I think you're getting at a little bit like the time differences.
Yeah.
So later what I would like to do and probably also publish is t-tests between the earlier data set and my data set, which I didn't include here. But yeah, that's definitely something I was going to look at. Yeah?
With the significant composting additions, do you have an overrides rather than an A?
We might, yeah, in the In some of these, they did still feel fairly mineral, but the carbon percents, 8% carbon is kind of an O, a little bit of an O horizon, but we describe them as an A to, is it not an O horizon? You're shaking your head. It's still an A. Okay. Yeah, we definitely wanted to, like, describe them all as an A. There was some litter on the top that would have been an OI, definitely. We did collect litter samples, but yeah. If that answers your question.
12% carbon. But if you could incorporate the compost and it's sitting on the top of the A, at what point does it become a...
Yeah, maybe start it as an A.
Yeah, actually in Kara Bergschneider's thesis from, I think she finished in 2007, she did describe them as an O, so when she did bulk density, she had to do the excavation method, but these were pretty much mineral by the time I went in, so I just took cores. Thank you.